It's your wake-up call.
Oh, my God.
It's 5:30. Are you ready?
For Racks and Stacks.
Yes. Jackie Verdell. Oh, spinning it. Just, bringing you.
Just the name of the... Just the Decca label just has, like, happiness all over it, man.
Those are very happy times.
Yeah.
You're going to be shaking your hips. Do it. One time. Good morning.
Good morning, man.
Hey, Aaron, what's up?
How you doing, Gabe?
That's my catch line, I guess. Hey, Aaron, what's up?
Doing good, Gabe.
Are you ready for it?
I'm ready, man. Let's do this. That's a great way to wake up, man. That is a great, great way to wake up. That kind of music, man. And I love that these 45s are just one track, just for a party. To me, the whole technology behind this is incredible. It's like, we're going to party with this one song, and we're just going to keep this going.
And we're going to flip it over and play side B.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds a little infantile to just say that you think the technology, I think the technology of records is cool, but it is. I have a turntable now in my life for the first time, and I'm all about it.
Ooh, yeah. Not that one.
Not that one.
Not that one either.
There we go. Yes. Yeah. I'm finally becoming, well, it's interesting because you said, when we were talking about what we wanted to make this podcast about, we were talking about music as being the primary driver. And from my standpoint, music's always been something that's been in my life. I grew up in a house with music. My dad was really into music, but my father passed away about 6 years ago, right? Oh, man. It's been more than that. Anyway, he passed away, and in storage, my mom has been holding all these boxes of his records. And so now I've got, I don't know, a couple hundred records that are his that I'm now like listening to on a daily basis, which is really cool because I'm getting to see this entire side of my dad that I didn't know. I mean, he wasn't hip to a lot of like of this soul music, or he didn't have those records in his collection as far as I know. I mean, maybe things have disappeared over the years. He met my mom in 75, or they got married in 75. So like these records represent a lot of that area. There's a lot of weird stuff. There's a lot of like very exclusive Marblehead, like Allman Brother-esque cover bands. It's really bad. It's really bad. I'll have to bring a couple of them in. But there's also like a lot of classics from that section. There's a lot of Joni Mitchell, you know, there's a lot of Bob Dylan. There's a lot of Kris Kristofferson. There's a lot of Merle Haggard, a lot of George Jones. Willie Nelson is in there a little bit. A lot of Tina Turner. My dad was really into Tina Turner. So it's cool. And there's like all these Ike and Tina records that are in there as well. But like getting to know someone through music is really great. You know, and I'm looking at these 45s that you've got with your buddy Patrick. And there's like, for the folks listening at home, there's like, if there are any folks listening at home, there are handwritten notes on these 45 covers, you know, and it's like, this is the beauty of these records is that like, it's a personal connection and this guy's sharing this stuff with you. It's amazing, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty, I feel very honored to have that pile of stuff to look at.
It's incredible.
So, I'm Gabe Bisa.
I'm Aaron Oster.
And this is Racks and Stacks.
This is Racks and Stacks, man. That's a little slow, burn in that intro.
It's okay. It was the build up and then the, hey, yeah. What's up? Hey.
Yeah.
It was my typical, hey, I don't remember your name, so just going to say, hey, buddy, what's up?
Hey, man. Yeah. I'm sure there's some proper protocol that we should follow in order to get people to listen to this thing, but as far as I'm concerned, like, this is just you and me talking.
Yeah.
So we'll start there.
Well, we're going to be going live very soon.
Oh, my God.
We have three here, so.
All right.
We're good.
So, you know, like, we've known each other for a few years now. And I've only known you as a DJ, right? Like, I've only known you as, I mean, when we first met, like, music is, I wouldn't say that you're career or, you know, your family, they have little to do with the personality that I know, because you are obsessed with music. And like, this is a big part of the thing that I love about you the most, is that you're so passionate about this one particular section of music within a period of time too. Like, why did this period of music, just talk a little bit about the kind of music that you really, really connect to. And like, why is that the thing that is, why did that resonate with you so much?
You can feel it in your soul. Man. You really can. So, for clarification, I am a vinyl addict.
Yeah.
Very much a vinyl addict. Spinning records is a real passion. Just the black discs is great. I love them. It's something you can hard hold on to, look at when you open up a gateway sleeve or like a gatefold sleeve, and you just, it's massive. It's something to look at. There's art, there's writing, there's pictures. It's an experience, and I think that's the draw for vinyl to people, is number one, that sleeve. Like, it's just something huge to hold on to. And number two, the sound is, with all of the imperfections and, you know, this one's clean, this one's not, it gives it some kind of life. And it's varying degrees. It's not the overproduced, crisp, clean sounding of a MP3 or whatever. It's just, it's real.
Yeah.
It's sort of like life.
Totally.
Sometimes you have to live with people's imperfections to still hear that music.
Yeah. And there's this thing about when I listen to, when I have all these albums and I see all these, I'm listening to all this music. It's easy when you listen to music digitally now to miss the production value that exists behind the album. But like all these records that we have, especially this one here, we'll post it on Instagram when we get an Instagram page for this
thing.
But I found a record in the sleeve of another record that I had. That's just like, it has artwork, and it's a stupid goof spoof record that came out when Jaws came out. And it's really lame, but also amazing. And there was a process. There was a meeting about that about that artwork. And then, like, in the studio, there's all the same components. There's, like, this commonality that exists with the recording and making of these albums that is the same with all of this. And sometimes the mics that they had in the studio were shit. And sometimes that, you know, whatever. But it was still the same process that everybody was following to make this art and then to put it on wax, man.
Put it on wax.
Pretty incredible, man. Ugh. There's a lot of work behind it as well, too. It's just, it's not easy to see it. Nowadays, but when you pick up these old vinyls, you're like, oh man, there's a whole thing. Like, there was a choice for this, like this color for Saber Records, you know? I love that stuff. I'm sorry. I totally cut you off there in the middle of diatribe, but
no, that was great.
Yeah.
So, back to your question, I am very drawn to, early reggae, ska, rocksteady records, soul, Northern Soul, those kinds of things really, really turn me on. But you get these records that just sort of, they fall in your lap, and sometimes you play it, and all of a sudden you're like, I gotta have it.
This is the greatest thing I've ever heard in
my
life.
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna play this one 5-6 times again and again and again, and it just sort of marinates like that Les Cornichons song. I was, the first time I put it on, I was like, oh, all right, this is kind of catchy. And then the more you hear it, you're like, okay, I want to play it again.
Yeah, this music is thick.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah. Those are the kinds of things that I really dig, and I love going out and finding.
Yeah.
But they also, what I found is that so many people that you wouldn't expect are into music that is different or cool or whatever, but it's a uniting kind of thing. Like, I'm getting records from a gentleman in Montreal on all of these French versions and whatever, and our commonality number one is music.
Totally. It's obvious. I mean, the notes that are on these, we'll take some photos of this stuff, but like,
huge shout out to Patrick Foisy.
They're incredible. I mean, just like, there's so much care taken into this gift of music from one person to another, you know. And these are records and tracks that you probably never find if you weren't connected with somebody like Patrick in Montreal, because his music is so specific to a particular time in history and a particular geographical location. I mean, it's awesome to see it. I mean, I think I'm easily accused of being like starstruck by all things, and like I'm always the person who's like, oh my god, that's so cool, and then someone's like, yeah, that's just that's just a piece of glass going into a frame, dude. And it's just, I'm always intrigued by the process for me. That's like the big motivating force for me, is watching something go from start to finish and all the skill that's required to get it through that process. But as I learn about music through you, because you've been sending me music at least 6 or 7 tracks a week, just wild stuff I've never ever heard of. Music has become a huge part of my life in the last few years, more so than it ever has. Aside from the fact that now I've got a turntable and now I'm like listening to stuff, oh, you're putting it on. But aside from that, there's also this component of like, where all these incredible beats and breaks come from through all the great hip hop and the R&B that I love. Like, man, it's all out there. I don't know where this is coming from. That's for sure. I don't even know if the people in the studio listen to this I Love a Shark album after it was produced.
You'll have to wait till the end of the episode to hear this great track.
Yeah. I love this. I love that ska and reggae. And I grew up listening to that as well too. I think in the early 90s, that sort of ska had made a comeback. Let's say became more mainstream, like the Boston's and like Real Big Fish. I don't know if you could consider that, but like Less Than Jake and Mustard Plug and all these like kind of like post, I don't want to say post punk, but like they were like a little bit more into the ska punk sort of genre. And that's what I grew up listening to, because I was hanging out with a bunch of idiot skaters. And we were all like, somebody gifted us a Black Flag album or a Sex Pistols album or something, and we were just like, this is blowing our minds apart. But like, it's not like the music goes away. It's still there. It's like a visceral, like it's like a time machine. Like you could just get transported right back to it. When you listen to all this music, do you feel like you're back in some particular place listening to music? Or is it, I mean, because you listen to this music now, so this is very present for you. Like, does it transport you back to a particular time when you started listening to this music?
It can.
Yeah.
I mean, when you put a certain song on, and I think that it can pretty much go for any genre. When you have a certain song come on and it just strikes the right chord, and you're transported back to, you know, whether it's high school or whether it's...
Where's that rim shot, dude?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, strikes the right chord. Whoa!
Oh, that's the applause.
There it is.
Hey, we're still trying to figure out these hot pads. But yeah.
It's, figure out meaning whether or not they should be used.
Yes.
You know, because they're bad taste pretty much most of the time.
they're there, so
yeah.
We should use them. But I think it's the amazing thing that you can put a song on and just sort of, it takes you someplace different that most other things can't do that. Yeah, I think food, you can definitely, when you get a certain smell,
that's what we're talking, man.
Yes. You get that smell and all of a sudden you're back to
totally
your grandma's kitchen and you're cutting onions or doing whatever.
I was talking to someone about that as well. Not about food, but about like music. And I will admit that I listen to lame ass 90s music. As a white boy from Connecticut. So like, just know that about me, that like, I don't care. I'm not embarrassed about it. There was definitely a lot of Third Eye Blind and like Tonic and like Sister Hazel and a lot of really bad music. Well, I don't know if it was bad music. I enjoyed it. I was in my youth, man. Like, that was what I was listening to. Mostly because it was my sister was listening to. But there were a couple of radio stations growing up that when I hear Talking Heads especially, and like Pretenders, and when I hear Public Image, like, it brings me back to a very specific time. And 92.3 K-Rock was like right out of Long Island. And then there was WDRE. That was another great radio station growing up that was the only one that played alternative music. Like, that's where the Pixies came from for me. So, like, I didn't have... My sister and I... My sister was, like, very, very much cooler than I was. And so I was, like, always trying to be like my sister. So she was always kind of, like, off. She wasn't the person, like, bring me to music events. So I would always be stealing her CDs to, like, get acquainted with new music. And we had a good buddy who worked at a record store in Connecticut where we grew up. But, like... I was only listening to more or less the top radio playable music from these alternative bands that were sort of on the fringes of, they were the popular versions of the really great, what I now know to be like really great stuff. Like there was like, I didn't go into the deep catalog of Flaming Lips or, you know, or the Pixies or, you know, I only knew the songs that I heard on the radio. So that was kind of like, it's taken me now to be connected with you or with Eric or when I get to meet Patrick and like really diving a lot deeper into this incredible music. And like Brian and Susie as well too are like really into that particular, I mean, I didn't know who, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a huge Wilco fan, but like I didn't know who they were before I moved to this town. So like I feel excited that I'm still like growing and learning about it because it's just, it's constantly there. And now the more people that I'm meeting, I'm getting in touch with their particular like Gabe, I would have never been acquainted with any of this music had I not met you. Like I would have been like, yeah, I would listen to the Trojan box set back to back nonstop. And that would have been good. You know, like I would have been totally fine with that. It would have been amazing, but there's so much, that's the tip of the iceberg. And to me, I get a little intimidated because I'm like, oh man, the ocean, it's like looking at the ocean and being like, there's good stuff in there. You know, I don't know how to get it. And so now that we're connected, I'm totally using you for musical connections for sure. And Matt's the same way.
Yes.
Like when shout out to, you know, Tall Ass Matt, DJ Tall
Ass Matt.
What's up? He'd bring music to those Racks and Stacks sessions that we do at AOK that were like, oh my God, man, I'm like blow
African electro funk from the 80s and
yeah, and again, like I can listen to Fela Kuti until the cows come home, but it's like what is beyond that? You know, and that's what I'm excited about. Like hearing these stories about your youth growing up, like, and also the music that inspires you now. Like, that's the thing that is getting me excited about being an adult, being able to buy the music that I want. You know, like I wasn't asking my mom for money to go buy records. Like now, I'm a grown up. I can do this myself. But it's just funny, like the things you take for granted. You know, like I spent the last 20 years building a career. Music was something that was played in the restaurant, and I liked music. I love music, but I didn't go to a lot of shows, and I didn't spend my 20s and 30s like really exploring my musical tastes. But now I am, and I'm thrilled. I mean, absolutely thrilled. Eric Kearns is like, there's a whole like electric 1980s like German section that he is obsessed with that I had no idea about, and I'm really excited to be learning about. So first concert.
So first adult concert, going to a show. There's a band out of Canada called The Tragical Hip.
Who? Are you kidding me?
Yes.
Are you kidding me? You saw The Hip as your first
that
show?
That was my first introduction to club shows.
What year?
Let's say 95. Oh, I mean, let's yeah, that was my first adult show. I was not.
Hit the applause button on that one, dude. Who knows? Okay,
not
great.
That one. I'll take
it. Yeah. Oh
yeah.
My God.
Yeah,
the Tragically
so
Hip.
The Tragically Hip. So God. Anybody who's not familiar with the Tragically Hip, they were considered to be sort of the Canadian Pearl Jam of the 90s. And
that makes sense. Yeah, that's a good description for him.
Gord Downey, rest in peace.
God, man, did you see that documentary?
Oh,
cried. Yeah. I cried like a baby.
It's crazy.
I'm going to pull up the name of it. I forget the name of it.
They were from Kingston, Ontario, which was about an hour from my house. So the Hip would travel through the Watertown, Syracuse area pretty regularly. And so, yeah, they were my first. That was my first show. First time I ever saw anybody crowd surfing.
How old were you?
17.
Dude. That is awesome.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Like, first of all, the documentary is called A Long Time Coming. A Long Time Running.
Yes.
And If you like The Hip, you're going to cry like a baby. If you don't know The Tragically Hip, you will enjoy it, and it's a beautiful, touching story. And not to spoil it for anyone, but Gordon, he died of cancer.
Cancer, yes.
And he documented the last stage of his life. He stayed on tour as long as he possibly could with the band, who hadn't really been playing music together in a while, and they went back on tour for this final leg. And I mean, they're the most beloved. I would say they're the most beloved rock band in Canada. I mean, like, different than Rush. Like, Rush is like a arena rock, you know, mm-hmm. for Canadian music. But like, they have a very warm place in the hearts of Canadians and people who lived in those northern states. I grew up and I went to summer camp in Huntsville, Ontario, a couple hours north of Toronto.
Okay.
And great camp. It was like a water sports camp. And I got introduced to Blues Traveler. I got introduced to The Tragically Hip. But The Tragically Hip was like, it was like sacrosanct. Like, you did not talk shit about The Tragically Hip.
Absolutely not.
And I listen to those albums now, and they completely hold up. Oh my God, I can't believe that was your first show.
Dude, Phantom Power.
Oh my, dude.
Phantom Power. You put that album on fully, completely is really, really, that's the really
that's,
good. Yes,
that's,
fully.
That's the album that, for me, is like, that's my youth right there.
Yes.
And like, can I just say that, like, if you were a Pearl Jam, like, if you're into this particular type of music, like, if you're a Pearl Jam fan, try to listen to the next Pearl Jam song you get a moment to listen to, and listen to how absurd Eddie Vedder's voice is, right? Like, it's powerful. It's like a little bit like, there's a haunting-esque component to it. There's definitely some sad Canadian, like some sad Pacific Northwest action that's in it. But like, Gordon's voice is like, oh my God, it's like, it shakes. For me, I feel like it shakes my soul. Like, I'm like, I'm on fire when I'm listening to this music, man. It's so good. Oh my God, you're,
dude. Yeah, so in the middle of the show, Gord always used to talk about, the devil lives in, whatever, Philadelphia. Well, he said, the devil lives in Adams, New York. And it was like, oh, that's where I live.
He's talking about me, yes. Man.
So as I'm driving back to home that night, and I realize that as I drive up Route 81, which is the major throughway, you can take 81 all the way to Florida.
Is that true?
Yes. Yeah. As I'm driving back up north, you can see the red lights from Fusillo's Auto Mall, the big, gigantic, used to be the big car dealer, it still is, but it was crazy. You could see how the skyline was just red, and I don't know if maybe that's where some of that came from. That was an interesting.
That's so cool, man.
That was crazy. Shout out to all of the guys that I worked with at the FYE, the Record Town, Movies Plus, those guys that, the older people who took me to a show. And we're like, hey, kid, come on, jump on the bus. Let's do this.
Unreal.
They took a kid that had, I was in the middle of trying to figure out what the heck is going on with life after you graduate from high school. And
Hip's great music to get to figure that shit out with, man.
Yeah, your life sort of turns upside down. And they took me under their wings. And so Dan Gotham, you were huge in my musical flight.
Nice work, Dan.
Yes.
You've done well, sir.
That was my first show at a club. Club Chameleon, which is now defunct, obviously.
Well, yeah. I mean, forget about COVID, but like,
that was, I'm 30, sure, 30 something years ago.
Yeah.
Or no, not quite, but whatever.
I have to think now. So my first show I think I ever went to was, and I'm remembering this now, and I've been trying to piece it together with my mom, but I was with my dad, and I may have been with my mom, or was my dad and one of his friends. It was a Highwaymen concert. My dad was big into Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings, and I remember Ghost Riders in the Sky, and I remember And I was a kid. I mean, I must have been 5 or 6, I think. Like, I just remember it. I just remember On the Road Again. I remember my dad singing. I remember being on a picnic blanket somewhere in the Northeast, and that was it. You know, we could have been at, like, the Meadows in New Haven, or we could have been, where's that, Hartford? Or we could have been, we definitely were not at, like, Tanglewood or something like that, because I looked it up. They never played there. But that was the first, like, concert I remember. And then it, like, kind of, like, flash forwards. And then at the teen center that I grew up in Connecticut, Arch Street, shout out Arch Street, what's up? The Boston's played, the Mighty Mighty Boston's played, and I forget who else played with them. But that was great. That was like, and the girl I was dating at the time, so her sister and my sister were best friends, and my sister and her sister and the girl I was dating all worked at the teen center. And so they sort of got me backstage passes to go see this show. It's a dog. There's a dog snoring underneath the table. Yeah. Got me tickets to go see these guys. And I think I walked into the green room for like a second and like saw the band. I was like, hey guys, how you doing? But I got to see them on stage. And that was like, it was the first time I'd like been to a concert as a, I don't know, as an independent person, you know? And like, I really got to see just this whole spectacle and feel the energy of like being in a place and the crowd surfing and like, man, just a guy skanking on stage, you know, like it's,
that's his job.
And I was like, man, music is incredible. You know? And at that time I was playing guitar a little bit more seriously. That's hilarious. yeah, I was like 13, 14 years old. I was totally playing seriously. No, but like my dad had gotten me a guitar when I was a kid and I was like interested in learning to play. And then, I took some lessons, but you know, anybody who knows me knows that I have a relatively short attention span. So, lessons did not work out for me. Well, I learned the basics, but then I just taught myself to play. And so, I'd kind of got back into it. I had a job as a paperboy to buy this Fender Strat that I really wanted. And like, to know that I'm playing this guitar in my room to like, you know, Kerplunk Green Day album, like with the strap really low in the mirror, just like screaming.
Power stance.
Yes. Full power stance. Full power stance. And then to see professionals on stage doing the same thing and being like, they're adults, that's their job. It kind of blew my mind apart, you know, because these guys were, they weren't doctors, you know? And it was funny because I grew up in a house where it was like, the life of the artist was not a goal, you know? It was like doctor, lawyer, accountant kind of thing. So it was pretty special, those first few concerts in my development. But man, like, there's still nothing like a live show. You know, Alex, my partner, man, she's like big music. Live music is like her thing. So I think there's an Australian band, which is like the Australian equivalent of Tragically Hip called Powderfinger, which if you don't know Powderfinger, man, if you're into the hip, like you're going to love Powderfinger. They are the Australian. I mean, I don't know why Pearl Jam is like the the same band.
They don't even tell stories like the hip or.
Well, they're beloved as well too, and I forget the guy's name. Bernard something or other is the lead singer. But again, great voice, great band, and so she was like, live music is a big deal. And I imagine like living in northern New York, close to the Canadian border, you know, like it seems like there's a little bit more of like live music and clubs and stuff like that. It seemed like maybe was that a big part of the culture there, or was it just sort of like nothing else to do up there?
Well, about 6 months out of the year, you can't do too much because of the snow. Mm-hmm. It's the snowiest part of the whole continental United States. They have snow in certain places until August. But there was definitely a club aspect.
Yeah.
I think until you're involved, sometimes you don't know what that aspect is.
Yeah, it's 100%. I was not involved, so I'm sure I did not know.
But I think I love club shows. I love a show.
Yeah.
200 people. The stage is about 20 feet away.
Dude.
That kind of vibe when we're all in it together, you're neck and neck, shoulder to shoulder. You can smell the BO from the guy next to you. He can smell the BO coming off of you. And just that camaraderie, kind of small, that is the vibe that I absolutely love. I've been to a few arena concerts, and they're really good. Technically, they are amazing. The light show, the sound, the
huge production.
The production is on point. But there's something about just being in a club with 200 people.
Dude.
Experiencing, whether it's the Scottalites, whether it's, you know, a punk rock show,
local show. Did you see the Scottalites in a club show?
Yeah, in Albany.
Oh my God.
It was amazing. Got a hug from Doreen Schaefer. My wife was like, I don't even really know who you are. But Doreen gave her a hug. And this is pre-COVID, obviously. Yeah. Just a great, great show. To see a band that has the musical heritage and the reach of that band in a club with 150 people or whatever.
Totally.
I was, you know, you can reach out and touch everybody from the band and dancing and, yeah, unbelievable.
Man, I don't have any regrets, man, but, like, I will tell you that what I really want more of in, hopefully in 2021, but as I get older, is start going to more club shows. I can only really remember one in recent years that I went to, and we were in Vegas, and Brandon Flowers, lead singer of The Killers, was doing his second solo album. And they're a Vegas band, if you don't know, and a buddy of mine, I ended up meeting this guy, Ryan Party, who was their manager when they started, because they all grew up in Vegas together. And Ryan ended up taking over as sort of manager for the Bunkhouse, which is an old juke joint down in Old Vegas on Fremont, like way down on the edge of town. It was part of this whole urban revitalization. So it was still kind of a stinky little joint, but it was great, you know, like really fantastic. And it was just like us and 150 people, you know, and it was like, he was right there, man. Like, mm-hmm. He was right there. And, like, Brandon Flowers, whether you like The Killers or not, that's up to you. But I love The Killers, and he puts on an incredible show. Like, ton of energy. And it was just like, man, it was a four-piece band and two backup singers, and they rocked this place, you know? But, like, that's the thing that I'm, like, between you or Eric or all the other people I know in my life right now who are really into music, those shows are so transformative. You know, it's like, man, like, I don't know if you've spent any time at Tourist. There's a hotel here in town that Eric does this thing with artists called Sing for Your Slumber, where Eric's a part owner in this hotel, and he arranges with these incredible artists to come spend a night either on a day off that they have on tour or like as they're moving through from like from Albany to Boston or from Toronto to New York or whatever, they're coming through. Like, we're kind of in the middle of this sort of vortex of like great tour spots. And he gets these incredible musicians to come and play. And it's like, you're right in a room. You're in a tiny room, like the size of a living room on a couch. And this incredible musician is like 2 feet from your face. That's part of the reason why I like living here is because I'm surrounded by people who are really into music, man. I mean, it's lovely, you know, just incredible to see those shows up close.
Yeah. We have, just a dearth of amazing musicians in the area that can just knock your socks off musically.
Yeah.
to experience when you sit down and just listen to somebody play a guitar, and it's and it is an amazing moment.
Yeah.
And it just, you're sort of like, I don't want to do anything else. I just want to listen to you play a guitar and sing.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
No light show, no pyrotechnics, no anything else. It's just somebody picking a guitar and singing when it's that powerful.
Yes.
It's not always that, but I think as we're all getting to that point where hopefully there will be live music coming again.
All I want. All I want.
I think hopefully people are going to appreciate the moment.
So big shows in your life. Obviously the Hip, transformative. I'm just going to go out there and say it. Skatalites, I'm sure, was incredible. But do you have, is there other like big show moments for you?
Yeah, and I hope our listeners are going to go, okay, that guy's cool, and I like what his stuff is, but he's really not that cool.
I really like that you put an S on the end of listener. I really do, because I think it's just, you believe in me.
I do.
And I believe in you, and I think that that's...
I believe in you and me.
Well, anyways. To our listeners, I'm putting air quotes around that.
Thanks, Mom.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. It's, I don't have my experiences are my experiences.
Yeah.
And so I will just give that preface that, you know, the things that mean so much to me may be minuscule to other people. Oh, yeah. That's not, you know, Michael Jackson in 85 or anything like that. But
you did not see Michael Jackson in 85.
No, I did not.
Okay.
I might have been wearing the parachute pants in 85, but it was not, did not see Michael Jackson in 85. Some of the shows that mean the most to me were local shows. Some of the shows that are high on my list are seeing bands like Coxbarra from England. I've seen them twice now, and both times those are in the top five.
I don't know them.
So, if you think of great punk rock bands of the, like the Sex Pistols kind of, era slash like, you know, punk rock, Coxbar is by far so I've seen them later on in their lives. So, these guys are 60 plus and they are rocking hard.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I saw Coxbar in Boston. That was probably the best show I've ever seen in my entire life. The Templars, Forced Reality, Coxbarra, just an amazing lineup.
Were they all old punk rockers?
Not necessarily old, but they're definitely getting older.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mean geriatrics on stage, but I just mean like...
Coxbarra, I mean, those guys are legit much older.
60 in punk years is like 246.
Those guys.
I don't know what the math is on that, but if you're thinking you're in your 60s and you've been a hardcore UK punk band,
yeah,
you've lived hard.
Yes, Coxbarra, Shock Troops. That is probably in my top five records of all time. You can put that record on and just spin it. Take them all. This is England Belongs to Me. Where Are They Now? Working. Yes, that whole album. You just put it on, like literally just put it on.
Yeah, I think that's that'll be next week, man.
Yeah,
we'll start with that.
That show was unbelievable. Just to get hanging out and seeing a legendary band. I've missed so many bands. I never got to see the Ramones.
Yeah,
I never got to see Johnny Cash.
Man,
those are musical regrets.
Yeah,
you can't go back, so I won't live too far in that
moment. Are they regrets? Like, you know, you were doing something else in your life at that time, you know, like it's not like their music is oblivious to you. Like you're still, their music still, it touches you. It's still a part of your lexicon of music that you pull from. But like, you know, like I never saw the Stones. I'm probably never going to see the Stones. I never saw the Grateful Dead. I never saw Johnny Cash. I never saw these great musicians that like were such a big part of it. I mean, I saw the Allman Brothers 1,000 times because they played everywhere, and they played like four nights at the Beacon in New York, and like tickets were always cheap, And, you know, I don't know if I'd go to my grave being like, I saw the Allman Brothers 10 times. Like, I don't know if that's distinguishable for me. But, you know, I only went to the music that was close enough for me to get to easily and affordably. You know, like, it wasn't such a huge part of my life. Like, it wasn't something that I was making choices to make sure that I could get to those shows. And now, like, the regrets, yeah, like, I would love to see that stuff. But I don't know, man. Like, music's pretty accessible at the moment, you know?
Yeah. So, seeing bands like that, when you are in a crowd and it's just, it sort of envelops you and it you become family.
Yeah.
And whether it's a small show, and that tends to happen a little bit more at small shows, is that you become family. You're in the pit.
That's a huge point, man. Yeah, dude. Yeah, totally. When you're, yeah, spending time in a mosh pit and at a punk show or at a rock, I mean, at a metal show or something like that, like there's a memory there's a physical memory that's associated with it. That's a really good point.
Yeah, yeah. When you can just walk up to somebody that you don't know and just put your arm around them and you're smiling and you're laughing and you're...
Punch them in the face, man.
Yeah. In brotherly love, I'm going to punch you.
Yeah.
No, I tend to be one of those guys in the pit that's looking out for everyone.
Was that your technique when you were in the pit? Would you just walk at people and be like, I'm going to punch you now. I'm going to punch you now, man.
No, I don't think I ever threw any legit punches just because. But I definitely bumped into people and grabbed people up off the floor. I always never.
Yeah.
I never understand why people would want to hurt somebody in a pit.
No, people who go and, I mean, I of all the punk shows that I've been to, or the, you know, the metal shows that I've been to, or even backyard garage shows, like garage band shows, like, assholes who want to jump into the pit just to get into a fight. It's like, come on, dude. Like, they usually get kicked out.
Yeah, they're not there for the camaraderie. They're there to just piss people off, and I don't like those people in pits.
No, those people usually get kicked out or got their ass kicked on the curb.
Yes.
Later. Yeah.
And I like to be part of the police. Maybe not the aggressive part of the police, but I want to make sure that everyone is safe and having a good time.
Because
that is the most important, is sort of having a good time and watching out and just experiencing that moment.
Uncle Gabe.
Yes.
Uncle Gabe just looking out. Just always looking out.
Why is that skinhead picking everybody up?
Because it's Uncle Gabe, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So being in a pit was just it's a great experience. Just the camaraderie, the kind of...
Yeah. Do you have any wild stories from any of these shows that you've been to over the years?
I wish I did. I guess I can say that the last time that I saw Cox Bar was in Worcester, and I took a friend with me, and he was middle 20s, and I was 40. And I was like, hey, I got tickets to the show, and it was at the Palladium, and which is kind of a weird place to see a show because there's seating and whatever. It was a great show. To see Cox Barre again was incredible.
Yeah.
But the funny thing was, I was the one in the pit, and he was sort of standing on the wall watching them and sort of experiencing the whole thing. It was funny to me.
Yeah.
Thanks, Austin, for being a part of that. You know, here's the old guy in the pit and the young guy's hanging out by the wall.
I think it's a lot. I think especially if you're not versed in how to be in that space, like to be comfortable in that space, like it's a lot. I remember the first punk show I went to. For some reason, I can't remember the name of the band that we went to go see. It was some garbage local band that we went. But like to see a mosh pit and to see a group of like 100 people jammed into a space, like, you know, neck and neck, like literally like shoulder to shoulder tight in a space. Neck and neck's probably the wrong terminology to use there, but like, you know, a tight, hot room and a pit that's like moving, and you know, 30 people in that group, like right up at the stage, like that's a intimidating space, you know? And like, yeah, I know that whenever I spent time in a pit, it was always like, it was incredibly freeing. And just to know that like we're all in this for the same reason, like this music, to be together, to sort of like totally just let loose and express yourself physically and like get wild. And, you know, you get a haymaker to the face. Sometimes that's all right. You know,
sometimes like, that's what happens.
That's what happens, you know, but like at the end of it, even if you're spitting blood, everyone's sort of like got their arm around each other, you know, and you have a beer at the end and you feel great. But like, man, I remember the first one I went to, I was up against the wall. I was like, I can't jump in there, man. You know? And like ultimately a guy I used to skate with was just like literally put his foot on my ass and just kick me in there, you know?
Get in there, boy.
But I think that the shows that I had experience, I mean, the number of shows I've been to is pretty small in comparison to, you know, people like you or, you know, just because I didn't follow, like my career, like work, food was the thing that I was spending all my time on. And my parents went to shows, I want to say often, like, but they would like when, I don't know, when Tina Turner was in town at the, so I grew up just outside of New York City. So when Tina Turner was playing Madison Square Garden, they'd go see her. When Pavarotti was playing, they'd go see Pavarotti, you know, like they would go see music only when it was around. They weren't like searching for local shows. They weren't really into music. Like the fact that music could be recorded and in their home was like, that was the ultimate convenience. But both my parents had their own businesses. And they both had a business that was in the house. So they were home, you know, and like they were working and like that was the priority. And that's great. Like that's the work ethic that I have. But I see now that like, as I make choices, I really want to have music to be a bigger part of my life. And so it's like, this is such a gift to spend time with you and all these other music obsessed people as well too. And this community has got a pretty rich musical, pedigree that comes through it, man. I mean, like George Clinton kicked off his farewell tour, like down the street.
Yeah.
And like, say whatever you want about Mass Mocha. That's fine. You know, like you don't have to love every institution that's out there, but I'll tell you that the music that they're pulling in is definitely in an attempt to create a special musical experience, you know, like, I think that's a great part about it, man. You know, and like Eric's doing the same thing with those lodge shows. That's really what I'm hoping for post COVID. Is like, man, I got to get back to those shows, you know, because that's the really special bit, man.
And I hope that when live music comes back, we can enjoy the moment. We can enjoy what we have. And not be looking forward to what's the next one.
Totally. Being present in those shows.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of on your phone and doing all that stuff. And I'm just as guilty as anyone else.
Oh, man. Come on.
To being sort of there, but not really being present. And I hope that we can just relish that. And I hope that we don't build them up in our minds too much where we can enjoy it.
Yeah, we're not like, disappointed. We're not
Oh, I waited a year and a half to watch you do this. Yeah. Let's just, I hope very much for...
I'll be honest with you. I'm going to go see DJs. I don't need to see live music in this sense because I just want to be in a room with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's... I was talking to someone about this yesterday, just about the thing that we all... It's kind of... I'm not, I want to say this carefully, but like, I think the thing we all took for granted before COVID was how important human connectivity is. And it's something that has given us, it's given me, I'll speak for myself. I think it's given me a lot of perspective on what it means to be able to be with my friends and so casually just go over to their house and, or go in for a hug or, you know, shake their hand. I mean, God, like even that is still, it's, I feel like I'm going to be a lot more present when it comes to those kinds of things. And I'm going to work harder not take those things for granted because we've been without them for so long.
Yes.
You know, and that's the magic of live music. It's like you're all in this room looking at each other like, can you fucking believe what the hell is happening right now? Like, this is amazing. And that's the thing that I love about live music. And I love about music in general. It's like you put on an album and it just takes you back there. you know, I found this record in my dad's collection that was, he went to Brazil in 70 for Mardi Gras. Oh, sorry, for Carnival. And each of the schools that participate in Carnival and in Rio, like, they're like a samba school. That's what they're called. And so you sort of go and you can sort of like pick a school that you want to go through the parade with. But each of those guys have their own, like, they've recorded their own particular music or songs together as a group. And I've got these records that were just sort of like these locally produced one mic in a room with people and instruments from 1970 from these samba schools. And it's awesome, man. You know, and it's like, you know, my father's no longer with us, but I can sit and listen to that music and like be transported back to that place in my mind. Like, I've never been to Brazil. I've never been to Carnival. I've never danced the samba with thousands of other people in the street.
Just in my living room.
Just in my living room. Yep.
In my underwear.
Yep. You know, let's not go there. Okay. I told that to you in confidence.
You're the only one that does that. I mean, come on.
Socks on, right?
totally.
Well, I think it's all about the static electricity, man. Yeah, just got to keep moving your feet on the floor. But like, I'm impressed with that. And even though I'm like, I'll be 40 this year, I feel like it completely takes me back to where I was. And I know it sounds a little bit trite, and it sounds a little silly, and sort of, I mean, what am I talking about here? The fact that I like music and that it makes me think of another time. But like, yeah, of course it's obvious, but like, it's emotionally packed, man. It's driven. And like, to get to explore people, like, I'm holding up Patrick's records that he's so beautifully gifted to
wonderful stack to Gabe. Of 45s.
You know, it's like, there's these notes on there, this personal connection, you know, that's pretty special, man. You know,
those are the stories. Those are the experiences. So I'm a construction worker, and I know the power of music. We call my radio the motivator, because when you're on a job site, if you can have a radio, and just having that noise and kind of that thing to drive you through the day is so important and so like needed. I need it. Anytime I'm on a site that I can't have a radio, it's really hard. Really hard to keep going, really hard to just find that groove. But when you're all sitting there and doing things, and you know, it doesn't have to be a great job, but you can sort of, it can make things better.
Totally.
So, at the times at my shop, we get, big, huge shipments of metal that come in and,
metal.
Yes.
Big metal, heavy metal. If you're not metal, you're not my friend.
Anyway. So, we were unloading a truck a couple weeks ago, and as a joke, I turned the radio on, and I turned on RuPaul's Work.
Oh, nice.
And for 3 minutes, it was the most enjoyable. We're laughing. We're sashaying with these long 26-foot lengths of metal as we're carrying it. But it was... It showed the power of music that
we were reminded to work.
Yes, it was totally a choice.
You better work.
We were all laughing, and it was to take an experience that sucks so hard of like unloading 75 boxes of, you know, 200 plus pound pieces of metal, and being able to kind of laugh and sort of enjoy that time and just laughing and carrying, I was just reminded of how powerful music is, because it can change attitudes. It can create a space that we were all sort of just in that moment. And, once we got it all done, the fabricator from my shop kind of looked at me and was like, I didn't expect that in your playlist. And I was like, come on, I'm a 90s kid. You know, that song just...
Yeah, just wait till Vanga Bus comes on.
But that's the kind of thing that, you know, a shared kind of song that has the right lyrics.
Yeah, man, just energy too, man. Yeah. You know, you're in it. You know, like, I grew up in kitchens where there was no music, you know, like it was fine dining. So you're focused. I mean, it's like a pin drop, you know, like you don't want to hear, the only voice you hear is a chef's voice and then someone else, you know, responding, you know, like, I need this, I need that, I need this. Yes, chef. And that's it. And like, and the food gets put out. But, I remember the first kitchen I worked in that had music in it. It was like, it was a fucking game changer, man. Not just because of the fact that people were so into listening that the chef had control of the music. And usually the music was like Slayer or, you know, Metallica. And for sure, music was played during prep, not during service. It was just like, you know, this is music in the kitchen. And so, like, I had one sous chef, Adam, who was really into metal. And so he would put on some, he'd put on some wild stuff, you know, like, I'm going to say Judas Priest was on the playlist, but for sure, Lemmy was on there. And like Motorhead, big part of it. Not like AC/DC or stuff like that, but like, you know, loud, aggressive, like rock. And it was, you know, it's amazing because like he would come in at 8 o'clock or so, and I worked the morning. And you start with prep in the morning with the prep kitchen, with the guys in the prep kitchen. And those guys are Mexican guys. And then there's a radio station in New York, a Latino radio station that plays mariachi music from like 5 to 6 or something like that, or from 5 to 7 or whatever. And you're just down there, listen to that. And you go upstairs and there's Slayer and Judas Priest like rocking upstairs. And then, you know, then the service starts and it's like contemporary 1980s and 1990s Italian sort of pop music, like Paolo Conti or, you know, I don't know, other like bar music that you listen to. And then at the end of the night, it's like Van Morrison and, you know, Johnny Cash or something else, just sort of like getting you home. And it's like the first time that I was sort of witness to the soundtrack of my life was like all these different cultures, all these different preferences that didn't fit necessarily anywhere. And then you just hear this music and it's like, it changed the way I enjoyed my workspace, you know, because then I began to associate my productivity with that particular music or the kind of people that I like to be around with that particular music. And I think that's a huge, powerful component to what it can do. And as I think about like what the point of these conversations are between you and me, it's like, you know, why is this stuff good to listen to? And why do we care? You know, and we care because like it's visceral. You know what I mean? Like we're having this reaction. It's real. And it's like, I want to, and most of the time I'm alone in the car screaming my lungs out. I want to like have someone next to me and shake them and be like, oh, this is awesome right now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, that's the fun part is that it's cheap thrills, man. Like that's the thing that I'm most excited about now as I get older is like cheap thrills are where it's at, man. A beer on a porch with some friends, a good song, or like a really terrible 90s pop rock song that I loved as a kid that I just need to hear at full volume and blow out my speakers.
Yeah. Kind of. So, for full transparency,
yeah.
the first Counting Crows album, I don't care.
Dude, who's judging you? That album was the
I'm judging myself a little bit.
It's a great album. Man,
that August and Every After, or what? I'm totally.
If that album played right now,
I would be.
You would be able to sing every.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. All those albums for me were like really, really big. Like that was 100%. That album in particular, and then Fully Completely was another one of my youth. But like, dude, Third Eye Blind. Okay, you know what? I get it.
Cards are on the table.
They're terrible, but that album, their first album. Okay, there were some bad songs on the album. Okay, but I don't know, man. Like, the album just resonated with me. 10. Like Pearl Jam's 10. Like, I know it's incredibly, you know, It sounds cliche, but like, man, I didn't grow up with access to like cool, random European like punk or weird electronic music.
Like, you weren't listening to Bowie from...
I was not listening to Bowie yet. Like, yeah. I hadn't heard David Bowie. You know, like, I think someone had played, like, I don't know, Young Americans, or I'd heard it on the radio or something like that. But, like, I didn't know, and mm-hmm. I didn't have anyone else. My sister was, she was trying to get me off her back because it was, like, the stuff I was listening to. But, like, the albums that she was listening to were, like, Cowboy Junkies, Edie Brickell. There was a lot of, like, Paul Simon's Graceland, that album cover to cover, like, for me, and Rhythm of the Saints, mm-hmm. for sure. Like, that's the music I grew up listening to. And it's, I listen to those albums now completely nostalgically. Not, and I don't care if it's good music or not. I mean, Paul Simon, let's just agree that Paul Simon's an incredible musician, and there's, that album is beautiful, but I don't think Motorcycle Drive-By is going to get listed in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or it's not going to break any records, and it's certainly not going to have a comeback resurgence because those guys are terrible and they're awful live as well too. They're the worst band on the planet live. Like, that's a studio album straight. But like, I remember that first album came out in high school, and then the second album came out in my freshman year in college, and that was like me and my buddy Eric, who, so I was on the rowing team, he was on the swim team, and we would do late night study sessions, listen to that Blue album, which is, God, it's so bad. The album is so self-important. It's so so dramatically emo, and like really trying to just like, life is hard and drugs and sex, and it's terrible. But I remember driving in his little, like, his, it was like a little Honda hatchback or whatever, to Dunkin' Donuts in New Brunswick or Piscataway, New Jersey at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and just getting like, I don't know, whatever leftover donuts or muffins they had, and just blasting that thing. Like, I don't know why that album was blasted. I don't know why the two of us thought that was great music, but whatever. It was like that memory with that guy.
It's your youth.
And I don't talk to Eric on a regular basis, but I can tell you that like, we're bonded because of that experience that we had together in the car late night. And, you know, he was really into, like, Paul Oakenfold and, like, all that big trance music. But that was, like, when LimeWire and, like, Napster and, like, people were just downloading music constantly. But, like, I don't care if it's good or bad. You know, those are my memories, you know? And, like, yeah, if I put that music on now, I'm sure I'm going to get eye rolls from everybody in the room. But it's, like, that's why I have my own car. That's why I can listen to my music.
That's why there's headphones.
Exactly. You know, like, I don't need to share that with everybody, even though I've now just put it on, you know, out into the world that, like, that Motorcycle Drive-By album has, like, or that, I think that's the name of the album. That first Third Eye Blind album is pretty significant for me, for better or worse. Mm-hmm. I mean, that Sublime album as well, too. Like, that came out in, what, 93 or 94? I listened to a lot of Sublime. So as a white kid from Connecticut.
Yeah.
And a lot of Dave Matthews. A lot of Dave Matthews. Probably too much for one lifetime. But that's where I grew up, you know?
Like, you have to start someplace.
Yeah. Well, it was all uphill from there.
Yeah. You know, you have to start someplace.
Yeah.
And I can say, like, just going through these musical sort of memories and history and all of that stuff, my introduction to DJ, the world of DJs and people spinning and doing all of that stuff. And, you know, I was a kid that was a little bit obsessed with like hip hop in the 80s. And obviously that was a great time.
Great time to be listening to hip hop.
So I would visit a friend at Nyack College, when I was in, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th grade. He was older than I was. And so we would go and visit him. And his roommate was named Ernie. And
great DJ name.
Yes. Yes, DJ Ernie. And my musical journey would not be complete without giving a shout out to DJ Ernie. Ernie was a Puerto Rican from the Bronx. Ernie would listen to Redman going to sleep. Ernie was way more pivotal in my life than I think he would ever even know. when I would go and visit Krister, I would tape Ernie's radio show, because Ernie had a DJ radio show, and him and a couple other DJs would be spinning hip hop tracks.
So cool.
And I would cassette record anything that I could, and then I'd bring those tapes back. And me and my friends, like, that is what we would enjoy. Todd Murray, you can totally remember. I'm a rebel. I'm chewing gum. that's just something that Ernie said on one of the episodes. And I wish that there was a way that I would even know how to contact him or whatever for him to understand that tiny little bit of what he was doing was so influential in my life, spinning records, being so into hip hop and that kind of culture and the, just the music that he imparted in my life is huge. And I would hope that as I'm spinning tunes and I'm playing records, that the weird stuff, you know, pretty soon, very shortly, we're going to play this other record, that 45 records are crazy because there's just so many things that you're like, how did that possibly make it onto a record? But it's out there. Like, those are the cool things that are so neat about this music and this, like, format.
It doesn't have to be good to be on vinyl. And that's the other thing that's kind of, like, satisfying. As I listen to a lot of music that I say to myself, I mean, I it's like saying when people see a Jackson Pollock painting or a Cy Twombly, you know, mid-century piece of artwork, and they're like, I could do that. You know, like, you don't understand the training of the artists to get to that point, to be able to be free and express themselves in that way. And that's what that is an expression of that way. But I listen to music. There's some 45s and some albums that I've listened to where I'm like, this is shit. This is just absolute garbage. And someone was like, you know what? We're going to record this, yes, and we're going to try to sell this, you know? And I don't know what the deal was. I don't know who made the decision to put this particular thing as the official representation of not only the label, but like of that production house or that artist.
Yeah. Somebody's time and money was spent on actually putting that, recording it, pressing it, promoting it.
Totally. Like, this album we're going to, this track that we're going to play is insane.
Like, for lack of a better word.
I mean, just like it's a spoof off of, it's not a spoof. I mean, like, it's like the sixth cousin of some Jaws theme, but it was like Jaws themed disco. I mean, I don't know what else to say other than Jaws themed disco probably had a very short window where had a possibility of being popular. And I feel like there's some good stuff in here. And like, I listened I'll be brief here. I know I'm sort of dragging on here and we're getting close to the end of this, but like, meeting Tall Ass Matt and having him put me in touch with this particular music. One musician that we're talking about is, Idris Muhammad. Incredible musician. I mean, just that track, Could This Be Heaven? Could Heaven Ever Be Like This? Is like, it's there's so much musicianship that exists in that particular group. Or like, you know, pick a Quincy Jones song, like Summer in the City. Just listen to it. And I'm listening to each particular instrument in that track and just being like, wow. And arranged by a particular person. I mean, it's not a jam session where somebody's like, hey, that sounds good, let's do that. Like, this is music that's written and rehearsed and then, you know, performed. And then you know that they performed it live as well, too. It's just the tightness and the process of doing that. I mean, I get it with food as well, too. You in construction as well, too. There's so much preparation and the skill set is deep to get to the point where you can make a building look like a building and that it's safe and all the things that a building needs to be. But that exists with this shitty record here. There's musicians that had real careers, you know, and like they were in, I mean, I'm sure if we really wanted to dig into it, we could find out where these musicians came from, but you know that these guys could rock. Like, you know that they were like in the studio and some guy was like, we're doing a song about Jaws. And they're like, oh, great. Okay. Just make sure you sign the check, you know, like, and maybe it's studio musicians, maybe this is a group, but I mean, I'm always impressed that it's you still have to be able to play, you know, and like, it's pretty great, you know. You don't always have to be able to play, but
it definitely helps.
It certainly helps. And like, there's some good music in here. I mean, if you like, if you're into that particular kind of music, so.
Yeah, so this is our longest podcast to date, which is, we're up to three, but that's great.
Yep.
We're going to try to keep it around an hour just to keep you, everyone's attention span. There was a lot in here today, and man, thanks for the memories.
Oh, yeah, dude. Absolutely, man. We're keeping building them. And why don't you show the folks what we really love?
Yeah, so... We love a shark. I love a shark. Marina Del Rey. It's great. So thank you very much for everyone for listening, and we hope you enjoy it. It's time to get funky. Have a great week.
Have a great week, man. Look at him.